The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 6th of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Jonathan Tobin, Managing Director at Arix Bioscience, is also a Board Director at Velos Bio, and he discusses Merck's $2.75 billion acquisition of Velos Bio. Also on the podcast, Joe Wiley, CEO of Amrit Pharma, talks about their record Q3 results, where they've raised full-year 2020 revenue guidance. Plus, Paul Hill, full-time investor and equity analyst, talks about five stocks you should add to your watch list, including GSK, Source Bio International, Verici DX, Gattaca, and Proactis Holdings. We also talk about AstraZeneca. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. You can check those out. In fact, top 10 versions of those lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you can also see lots of content right there on the page. Videos, podcasts, and articles right there. And our COVID-19 index is there as well. Biggest riser today on that index is Dev Clever Holdings. That's up 11.5% to 8.25 pence. Biggest fall today is Tizian Life Sciences, down 4.4% to 119.5. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jonathan Tobin, Managing Director of Arix Bioscience, that's A-R-I-X, and also a Director of Velos Bio, which is very relevant today and for the news yesterday. Jonathan, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, well, listen, Velos Bio has been acquired by Merck for $2.75 billion. And we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, as always, like I said, that's not just one holding you have, one investment, you've got a portfolio. So for people not familiar with Arix Bioscience, I know a lot more people are more familiar since yesterday's news, but just give them a brief summary as to what Arix Bioscience is all about, if you could, Jonathan.
We're a global venture capital firm that focuses on breakthrough biotechnology companies, mostly private. Since we started investing 4 years ago, five of our companies have gone public, and now Velos has just been acquired. That was our first major M&A exit. We have a portfolio of 11 more companies, all in first-in-class treatments for life-threatening diseases, and we have a very experienced team spread across Boston, London, and Munich.
Yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff. So, like I said, you announced yesterday, that one of your portfolio companies, like you said, Velos Bio, there, it's been acquired by Merck for $2.75 billion. Could you start telling us a bit about Velos Bio and what they do, Jonathan, please?
Sure. Well, Velos Bio is a company that is based in San Diego. And they have been developing an antibody drug conjugate, which is a pretty new type of drug, and it's a way of targeting a toxic molecule that kills cancer cells specifically to the tumor without affecting healthy tissue. So much safer than chemotherapy and much more effective. And what Velos showed very quickly, we only first invested in the company in 2018 when they were still preclinical, is that they're able to shrink the tumors, in many cases complete remission, in up to 80% of patients that have intractable forms of lymphoma. And now they've started a phase two trial also in solid tumors. And the opportunity here is extremely broad for multiple different types of cancer. And that breadth of opportunity with the kind of depth of remissions in patients that are, you know, on their last legs is what attracted Merck, who are the world's predominant leader in oncology drug development, to acquire the company for this huge amount. It's actually the largest private M&A deal of a biotech company of 2020.
Wow. So, like I said, you're on the board of VelaSpire. And so, how do you guys sort of get involved at the board level there? And of course, you know, you can see this massive potential opportunity, market opportunity. But what first, you know, because there's plenty of, you know, drugs being developed on the market. So, what attracted you initially to this investment?
Yeah, there are lots of drugs in development, you're right, but hardly any of them have the kind of potential that this one has. The thing that attracted us initially was three things, really. One was the team. I mean, first and foremost, the team behind Velos developed a drug in a similar type of indication, and the company that developed that drug was acquired by AstraZeneca 5 years ago for $7 billion, and that drug's now approved. And is making a difference to thousands of patients, and we wanted to back this team again, and we've done that with serial entrepreneurs in other companies like Harpoon and Artios and Quench in our portfolio. It's a familiar theme for us, and one that really pays dividends. The second thing was the ADC space. You know, timing is an absolutely key part of our skill as investors. Spotting what may not be very hot today, but what we predict will become hot in 2 to 3 years. And when we went into Velos in 2018, this type of drug, ADCs, had suffered many setbacks with clinical failures and toxicities in patients. But we had a hypothesis that the industry was at a stage where it was about to learn from all of that experience and turn a corner. And that happened in 2019 when four new ADC drugs were approved. There were multiple multi-billion dollar acquisitions. Just last month, Gilead paid $21 billion for an ADC company. And now Velos is really proving that our investment thesis about ADCs was spot on.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's talk about the transaction itself. When it closes, what return do you expect to make from this transaction?
So we will return approximately $185 million or about £145 million in cash to our balance sheet, which is approximately 12 times our cost, which was £12 million, within a time frame of 2 years.
Yeah, wow. And that's half the size of your market cap at the moment, which is amazing. And so what impact does this have on the net asset value of Arix?
Yeah, it increases our net asset value by approximately £120 million, which compared to our current net asset value is basically adding 89 pence per share approximately onto our NAV.
Yeah, wow. Now, you can't expect to do this with every deal. Hopefully, you know, you've got a portfolio of investments there, but like I say, you've got lots of others there, lots of other potential and in the investment. Are there any there you can stand out to you at the moment? Do you think, wow, that could also be, you know, another blockbuster?
Yes. You know, we've had five companies go public, and I think those are more visible in our portfolio. Companies like Harpoon, Autolus, and Imara, all of which have clinical data in the next 12 months, which could lead to, you know, Velos-like valuations. But the interesting thing about Velos was it was in our private company portfolio and was largely under the radar. And we have many other companies like that in our portfolio, such as Artios Pharma, which is another oncology company, also with a team of serial entrepreneurs going after a completely novel premise in oncology. We have a company like Aura Bioscience, which is a late stage company for eye cancer. We have Atox Bio, which is hopefully going to get FDA approval for its drug early next year. And so all of these private companies, which, you know, are right now really valued quite conservatively on our balance sheet, could all become the next M&A opportunities within the next 12 to 24 months.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Well, if anyone needs three reasons, Jonathan, if they're not following the company right now, please give them, if it needs to be a summary, but three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add Arix Bioscience to their watch list, please.
Well, I think this landmark acquisition really validates Arix's investment team's ability to pick winners and to back the best entrepreneurs with the best possible drugs at the best time in the cycle. I think, importantly, Velos is just the start for us. And whilst it's a phenomenal outcome, we expect plenty more of these kind of results within our portfolio, both our current portfolio and the companies that we will invest in the future. And then the third thing is that, you know, whilst you can get phenomenal returns from these kinds of deals, as Velos proves, the most important thing is that these products are going to make enormous difference to patients. And, you know, companies like Velos and Autolus and Harpoon, their drugs are actually curing people with terminal cancer and other dreadful diseases. So there's an opportunity to actually make a huge societal impact as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Jonathan, congratulations on that, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Joe Wiley, CEO of Amryt Pharma, AMYT is ticker. Joe, thanks for joining me.
Good to be here, Justin.
Yeah, we haven't spoken for years. I've got to say, the company and yourself, they've progressed massively. I think the last time we spoke, you're pretty much a sub-50 million market cap. You're now over 300 million. The share price is a lot higher. You're on the NASDAQ, so it's very impressive. I know a bit about you, but for people who don't, Joe, before we get into, you've just released an impressive set of quarter three results here. Before we dig into those, for people not familiar with Amryt Pharma, just give us a brief summary as to what the company's about, if you could.
Sure. Well, firstly, thank you for having me on, and thank you for saying that. We have been busy here at Amryt since we last spoke, for sure. So we are a commercial stage biopharmaceutical company focused exclusively on treating rare disorders. They're called rare or orphan diseases. And our strategy is to acquire, develop and commercialize products in rare and orphan diseases. And we have built our business to date. We formed the business in 2015, and we've built the business today through acquisition by acquiring companies and products.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so those quarter three results, some impressive double-digit increases there. So give us, if you could, first of all, dealing with the financial side of it, some highlights from the quarter, if you could, Joe.
Sure. Well, why don't I start with the guidance, because it gives your listeners a sense of scale. So we have two launched commercial products called Lumitipize for a disease called HoFH and Metreleptin for a disease called lipodystrophy. And we at Q2, we guided that we expected revenue for FY 2020 to be between $170 and $175 million. We were denominated in dollars. Mm. This quarter, we delivered revenues this quarter of $49.3 million for the quarter. In addition, we increased our guidance. So we upped the guidance to between $180 million and $182 million for the year. So we were really pleased to do that, Justin, given that in this year of years with the lockdowns, et cetera, because we have a very robust business model we have a recurring revenue stream. Because we treat rare and orphan diseases, these diseases often are most often genetics, so patients are born with them. And when they go on to our therapies, they tend to go on to therapy for a long time, often for the whole of their lives. And that means that we get really good visibility, therefore, of our revenue. So to be able to increase revenue guidance in Q3 for the year in this pandemic was very pleasing.
Yeah, absolutely. And year-on-year growth of revenue 19%, cash generation looking good as well.
Yes, indeed. So it was 19%, as you say, year-on-year of growth for Q3. But in fact, we have delivered $140.1 million for the first 9 months of the year, and that's 23% year-on-year growth. So even more than that. The other thing for your listeners that's important is, we didn't want to be a boom and bust biotech. So what I mean by that is biotechs are great when they work. If a study works, mm-hmm. the shareholders can do really well. But equally on the downside, can often be the end of the company if things don't work out. So we wanted to break the mold of the biotech. We wanted to provide that upside in a biotech investment without the significant risk on the downside. And the way to do that is to be a commercial business and to be a cash generative business. And that's what we are. We are a very unusual biotech in that we are generating both revenues, but also EBITDA positive. We delivered 13.5 million of EBITDA in this quarter. And that was 96% quarter on quarter growth, and we delivered 21.1 million of operating cash flows year to date to September, with 11.4 million in the quarter. So we're actually generating cash as a business. That's evidenced by our cash balance, which actually went up again, a very unusual thing for a biotech. Our cash balance went up from 67.1 million. Dollars on the balance sheet as of the end of June to 75.4 million as of the end of September. So we're performing and growing both top line and bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely. And where specifically is that growth coming from? And more importantly, do you expect to keep growing at this?
Yes, indeed. So, as I alluded to, we've got two commercial products. One is called Metreleptin, which treats a disease, as I said, called lipodystrophy. That product delivered $29.9 million in this quarter, and that was 31% growth of Metreleptin. Lumitipide, our other product, also grew, delivering $19.1 million in the quarter. But grew 4%. So it's contributing, but not growing as much as Metreleptin. And the reason for that is predominantly that Metreleptin was approved recently in Europe. So it's approved and launched across the world. We have the global rights ex-Japan for both of these products. Mm-hmm. But Metreleptin was approved in the US in 2014, whereas it was only approved in July 2018 in Europe. And that's, in pharma terms, therefore, it's just after being launched. Mm-hmm. And we're very much in our launch pattern right now. In Europe, seeking national reimbursement across the continent, and the EMEA is contributing significantly to the growth. Right now, US is still 51% of the global revenues of Metreleptin, but and EMEA 28%. But it's going to grow significantly. We anticipate over the coming quarters, given that we are, as I said, expecting national reimbursement events to occur in a number of countries. So we expect the growth to continue for both products, but particularly Metreleptin driving near-term revenue.
Excellent stuff. Okay. And as far as, operationally, highlights from the quarter, Joe?
Yeah, quite a few, actually. So a busy quarter for the business. We dual listed on NASDAQ in the quarter. So we've been on AIM since we listed in April 2016. And then this quarter in July 8th, we dual listed on NASDAQ. And the reason we did that, Justin, is because we wanted to access a greater pool of investors who invest in growth stories like us, and particularly biotech growth stories like us. And it also allowed us to broaden our analyst coverage. And we now have analysts covering us from both Cantor Fitzgerald and Canaccord with significant price targets. There's a lot of investors in the US who invest in companies like ours. So we did that on July 8th. And then we also announced the results of a phase 3 study. It's the last study before potential approval of a product. We have been, ever since we came to AIM, in fact, been working on this study. It's a study in a rare disease called EB, or epidermolysis bullosa. It's called the worst disease you've never heard of, mm-hmm. A truly horrific disease where children are born and they lack the proteins in their skin that hold their skin together. And if you lack the proteins that hold your skin together, minor trauma such as pulling on socks will rip your skin off. It's a horrific disease. I've described the current standard of care for these children as in Western medicine is medieval. Why do I say that? Because all we do is we wrap them in bandages and we send them home, and that's it for life. They spend their life in tremendous pain. There's no therapy at all. A number of companies have tried and failed to produce a drug that would help these children. We have tried and succeeded. Our phase three was positive, and we were enormously pleased with that. So we are potentially going to be the first company ever to have a drug approved, if our product is approved. It's called Filsuvez. We used to call it AP101. But if Filsuvez is approved by both the FDA in the US and EMA in Europe, we will be the first company in the world, rather, to have a drug to help these children. So yeah. We're very pleased, but excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And investors now, or potential investors, what kind of news flow or milestones can they expect in the next few months then, Joe?
Yeah, quite a lot is happening, actually. as I said, we have our positive data now, so we will be submitting that data to FDA and EMA. We expect to have that completed by the end of Q1. And all going well, then we potentially could be approved a little earlier in the US, so early Q4 potentially, and then we'll launch the product if we're approved in the US, and that's a significant market opportunity. Europe will take a little longer, so by the end of Q4, and then we'll go and launch in Europe in Q1 2022. Another thing for your listeners to know is that there are incentives for companies like us to develop products to help patients with these rare diseases, rare or orphan diseases. And if we are successful in the US, we are entitled to get a thing called a priority review voucher. Mm-hmm. So if the product is approved in the US, we can get a priority review voucher, and they can be used, sold, or transferred. And they're very valuable. The last one was sold for $100 million. And that's about the going rate for the pure visa priority review voucher. So that would be huge for us if we're to be approved, as I said, in the US. In addition to that submission, obviously, we're going to continue to grow our commercial business. And then we have a number of life cycle opportunities for our existing commercial assets. What that means is potential label expansions or new labels for those. So we will be discussing those with the regulators over the coming quarters as well, and we'll be announcing that to the market. And then, of course, I told you we've built this business by acquisition, and our strategy remains to acquire, develop, and commercialize products in rare and orphan diseases. We remain extremely busy on the business development front, so we'll see where that gets us to.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Joe, well, listen, every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on the platform. To get on that list, of course, people have to hit that follow button. So if people are listening right now, like the sound of the progress you're making there, but are not yet following the story, just give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add Amrit Pharma to their watch list, please.
Sure. So first of all, as I said, we're unique. We are number one, a commercial business that is delivering significant revenue growth, but also EBITDA growth and cash generation. Whilst number two, providing in addition the biotech upside, the upside in clinical development, with now our positive phase three in a significant market opportunity. And then number three, we have built a very successful business to date through acquisition, and we will continue to seek further value accretive acquisition for shareholders over time.
Excellent stuff. Joe, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Sounds good, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
For the first time ever, welcome. We got a video and a podcast going on at the same time. I'm joined by Paul Hill, equity analyst and full-time investor. You all right, Paul?
Yeah, popular demand.
I've got to make sure I stare at the stare at the camera. And you normally when you're talking, I'm leaning back doing all kinds. That's why I like audio. You see, you can do it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, unfortunately, a lot of people have actually been saying they want a bit of video, but they probably are a bit scared by the way I look. But hey, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Well, let's start first of all. We're going to get into some stocks, but let's start first of all. But we can't ignore the U.S. elections. It's just a slow car crash happening. Trump is dying in the slowest way possible. And he's denying it. He'll go to court. He'll lose that as well. It's going to be dreadful for him, I think. But it's a foregone conclusion. But the markets, everyone thought Biden would get in, the markets would tank. They're not tanking. And there's a good reason for that, isn't there, really?
Yeah, hey, I think that it's the best case scenario for investors, simply because there's going to be absolute gridlock in Washington still. They were worrying about that blue sweep, the Democrats sweep across the whole of Congress and the presidency. But because of basically the Senate still staying with the Republicans, it looks as though nothing's going to happen. And therefore, everybody's having a party on Wall Street.
Yeah, it's nuts. Do you know what I would recommend? I'd highly recommend on Netflix a series called Explained. I've just watched the last two series, and they do one-offs, and they've done one about the votes in America, how it came to be, from the start, when basically it was a privilege to vote, where you had to pay your money, then it gets people become a right to vote. But even now, it's still hard, and it's still messed around with. And now, can you buy an election? And that's very good. It's starting with how much money they spend. And in this, our country, it's capped. I didn't know that. It's capped. You can't spend a certain amount. You can't spend more on adverts in Germany. You can't spend on adverts. Too much is capped. In America, it's nuts. They do a big graph. They just show the size of the spend that America's, and it's something like it gets up to $7 billion in all told, all the ads, everything. And you think that is nuts, $7 billion on an election. But you realize the kind of money it generates, then it probably isn't. But you think if there's no cap on it, there's corruption. It's open to corruption. You can get money from anywhere, pretty much, can't you? You know.
Yeah, you can. But I would say, though, it's very unusual for this sort of 4-year cycle for elections. But it's a bit of a sideshow. The most important thing happening in the markets is what's happening in terms of infection rates. And I know we ran through it a lot, but was some quite interesting news this morning from AstraZeneca. I don't know if you saw it, but they confirmed they were going to get phase 3 results out fairly soon on their combo with their vaccine combo with Oxford University. And they'll probably get approval from the European authorities before Christmas, which is brilliant. But I'll tell you what was really interesting, which caught my eye, and it came from the Wall Street Journal. You know how they're actually storing? They're basically producing this vaccine like mad at the moment. Yeah. But they don't know the shelf life of it. And that's because it's live. You know, a vaccine is live. It's basically, obviously, it's proteins and all kinds of stuff. And so they're storing it in a basically a big freezer, yeah? And what that means is they can't yet put it into vials, into ampules, yeah? So what they're hoping is they're going to get approval and then they're going to melt it down and then put it through production process. Now, you can do that on small quantities, okay? Yeah. However, what really caught my eye is that you think what's going to happen next year. If they get approval or anybody else gets approval, then they're going to have to basically make this pretty much live and then pack it, because the supply chain isn't going to be able to suddenly turn a switch on and do 5 billion vials.
I heard this before, but saying, I remember Bill Gates saying, the thing is, the vaccine, when you get the vaccine, that's the problem. So we've never produced a vaccine in this amount in such a short space of time. You can't just take over a vaccine factory, because obviously that's needed. So, and by the way, AstraZeneca's fallen short because of this. They're supposed to have 100 million doses by the end of the year ready to go. Now they've got 30 million ready to go. But do you know about the economics at all? And everyone's saying AstraZeneca won't make money out of this. Now, don't be so silly. First and foremost, right, they wouldn't be doing it. The corporation that lives on profits. They are doing it for the good of the people, of course. But this is like a flu vaccine. It's going to happen every year. They're going to be producing it every year. So they may not make money on this one, but over time, they will make money, guarantee. And someone put it, the market, the $10 billion, the COVID market, vaccine market, I think Morgan Stanley analysts, $10 billion, that's at $20 a pop per vaccine. So, of course they will, because it's every year. It's like free.
Totally agree. But you remember the company we talked about last week, Source Bioscience, okay?
Yeah.
One of their divisions does storage for drugs. And do it at 5 degrees centigrade. So just think, you've got the US, you've got the UK, and you've got Ireland having to store masses of these ampules and vials, which have got live virus next year, in cold storage, not frozen, but basically in a fridge. Where's that going to go? Well, you can guarantee where some of it's going to go. It's going to go sourced bio. Okay, and I mentioned that last week. And now another one which is interesting.
So they only listed last week, didn't they? SBI is a ticker.
Think how that's going to be a rocket potentially for their capacity, their drug storage business. Now, the other one to think about, which you've talked about, and I know you've been interested in it, is MPAC, okay? They make high-speed packaging machines. Just think, when we start freezing, so we start, you know, defrosting these vaccine or make them next year, who's going to have to make all these ampules in terms of, like, you know, it's going to have to go to high-speed packaging machines. So they're right in the crosshairs to benefit as well.
And the at the chart of impact, and it's looking very good, actually. It's just
I think you and I both missed that opportunity.
Yeah, it's in a trend upwards. And look at that. Do you know what? When you look back at it, talk about the fear and greed of the market. You could have bought any stock in that sell-off and you could have made money. If you look back, and it's the hindsight of knowing that fear is the time to buy. You know, when you went fear like that, an impact, for example, you could have bought that in March at 175, it's now 395. Yeah. So it's like, you know, and that's, to be honest, there's certain companies that did 10 bags since March, but I mean, it's crazy how, you know, when you look back at it, hindsight is a wonderful thing, you know?
Yeah, the other way of looking at on the sort of like when you get massive sort of like, you know, distress in the market is don't panic sell. So it's not just what to do, it's what not to do is key as well. And so if you've got good positions in solid businesses, even if they crash and they've got long-term prospects, they're going to do okay. So if you've held MPAC in January and it went down, you were wrong to have sold it, and you held it and you were doing okay. So, but anyway, the other thing, so you've got two winners there potentially from the Astra, which was really interesting, I thought. The other one, which is another one, is everybody's but had a
so
real...
So you say one of that impact? I quite like that idea, because you think of it now. You have certain hot sectors, like we went into this COVID and all the COVID testing stocks have gone ballistic and gone mad.
Yes.
And now slowly we realise there's a lot of competition there. I've seen government contracts announced, and everyone whose holds are listed sort of COVID testing stocks, is that us? Yeah, I looked it up, and certain companies I've never heard of, they're private companies. You realise it's now becoming a crowded market now. There's so many people doing this testing, but then where's the next, you know, hot area going to be? And you've got to be right there. Packaging and storing these vaccines is going to be hot, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. Well, cool, you could probably say. But yeah, exactly. Yeah, it should be a hot, cool market. But anyway, I'll give you another one as well, which again, I think the market, and this is a big cap on it, and we've talked about it before. We both like it, I think. GSK. What a flip, you know, market cap, basically, which rated about half of what AstraZeneca is. Now, what I don't think the market realises is this is a picks and shovels COVID vaccine, because it hasn't got a frontline vaccine itself. It is developing one with a startup business out in California. It's the world's number one vaccine maker. And the reason why it's going to could do potentially really well out of this, it provides the adjuvant, which is an accelerator, an increase in potency of these vaccines to nearly all of the major frontline six vaccine makers, just about four of them. So what that means is that Glaxo, you get this adjuvant in, which I think is made out of something like vitamin E and shark oil or something like that, and it improves the potency of a potential vaccine. So you can then have, you'd only a small dose, a smaller infection, you know, more smaller dosage to do the same benefit. Or alternatively, if you want to give you greater immunity, you give them a bigger dose. So it's like effectively a concentrated dose of vaccine. Nobody's sort of picked that one up.
No. And do you know what? If you look at the charts of AstraZeneca, which is now the biggest listed company in the UK, and the charts of GSK, they're diametrically opposed. One, you know, AstraZeneca, top right of the screen. GSK just hit an oversold level on the RSI, means it hit like, it went down below the March sell-off, which I don't understand.
Exactly. And so all I would say is that if you're looking for an unknown, people should know about it. I mean, it's the world's biggest vaccine maker, but I don't think it's underappreciated because of this adjuvant they've got, which is that effectively increases the potency of the vaccines. And it comes back to your point that, apparently, you know, none of these companies will make any money out of vaccines. And you know, and I know that going forward every single year, they are going to make a pile of cash out of it. So I think this is
in July, AstraZeneca can declare whether we're post-pandemic, and then they can up their pricing on the vaccine. As now, it's limited. But yeah. Once the pandemic is cleared, and it's cleared it's not a pandemic anymore, they can go to proper commercial pricing. So
And what think what will happen if you get two or three of these vaccines done, and we need 4 or 5 billion of them each year? Who's going to be supplying all the adjuvant for them? There's only one game in town. It's basically AstraZeneca. So I wanted to point those sort of three out, you know, in terms of
GSK's, by the way, like, last time I looked, GSK's margins and all that are a lot bigger than AstraZeneca's, you know, and I don't know if it's still the same, but the other 6-7
Yeah, they're at sort of slightly different stages of the of healthcare, because Glaxo has got sort of like more mature portfolio and therefore has higher margins, whereas Astra has very big exposure into immunotherapy for cancer and stuff like that.
Okay.
Another healthcare stock that is worth mentioning is another one. It's incredible, really, because it's been, I haven't bought anything, but I'll tell you, my portfolio on stock watch list, I can hardly fit them on the screen at the moment.
I know, yeah.
Verici DX, they listed this week, and they span out of Renalytix, and Renalytix came out of EKF Diagnostics. Now, this came onto the market, I think it was on Tuesday, and they raised £14.5 million at 20p, valuing the company at about 30 million market cap, I think it was. Now, just have a quick look on your screen what the shares are doing this week.
I'm looking at your first. I'm on the front page of Vox here, and it's your interview there. The CEO,
Sarah Barrington. I spoke to the CEO, Sarah Barrington, who's out in Los Angeles, and the inventor of this technology, Barbara Murphy. And what the company does is they are effectively a groundbreaking immuno diagnostics firm for donor transplants, but specifically focusing on sort of kidney transplants. And the reason why I say it's groundbreaking, you've probably heard as well in the medical, using the immune system to help treat or diagnose certain conditions is leading edge. And you can see that in cancer. Well, these are the only game in town for using it, the immune system, to target, well, to use for diagnostics, to target the kidney donor market. And what they effectively do, you know, you know as well as I do, in terms of it's quite difficult sort of like getting donor parts from people, and so you want to make the great success out of them when you give them to somebody else. These guys massively improve two things. They massively improve, first of all, the matching process between the donor and the receiver, so you increase the success rate and reduce the level of side effects. Yeah, so they do a predictive test that allows you to match that much, much better. There's nothing else out there at the moment. And then the second one test they do is post-operation, post-transplant. They can test basically how the patient's responding to the donor, and therefore you improve the level of drugs, immunosuppressant drugs, you give to the patient. So it improves their quality of life, it reduces the healthcare costs, and effectively increases the success rate of that donor organ being accepted by the patient. Now, the reason why the shares have rocketed this week is because people are starting to realise this is a really cheap stock.
It's the charts, right? It's literally, we've only got 3-4 days worth of chart there, but the first one goes, the first bar on the chart goes from 20 pence to 36 pence. Second one, it opened up to 37.5 to like 45, and now we're at 48 pence. It's more than doubled in 3 or 4 days. Wow.
Well, just give you an opportunity. This is the sort of like a 2-year thing. They need to do a validation test on the technology to get it finally approved. But when I say validation test, it's confirmatory. It's not actually they're testing anything new. They've got all the results. It's a matter of just validating it in over the next 12 months. But to give you the opportunity set here, yeah, the market for this is estimated at roughly, for these kidney immunodiagnostic tests, is estimated, because there's nothing there at the moment, about $700 million per annum. And that is per annum. Yeah, if you then basically assume they get only 10% market share of this, and that's quite a conservative, that's 70 million turnover. I mean, we're talking 80, 90% gross margins here. These companies are valued at 10 times sales. Their biggest peer group competitor is a company called CareDx, which is on 10 times sales. So if you go 70 million turnover dollars times it by 10, even I can do the math, that's 700 million. You then divide by 1.3 on the currency, you get 500 million market cap. At this new share price, what is the market cap of
68 million at the moment.
Well, there you go. So there's plenty. That's why people are starting to wake up as a massive opportunity. They're fully funded, and the science has come out of Mount Sinai, which is one of the world's leading medical institutions. And as I say, when I spoke to Barbara Murphy, who invented this technology, I mean, she's one of the brightest cookies around in this sort of area. And you look at their science advisory board, and I asked her about this. I said, you know, sort of like, what do you, how do you manage to sort of like, corner the market in global kidney experts? And she basically said, they're all basically my friends, and I know them because, anyway, all I would say is that have a look at this one because, it looks absolutely terrific.
Absolutely. But I'm always scared by a share price that's risen that. But I'm always remember being on a podcast and talking about a company, and this company went up by 300% in one day. And I thought, I'm not jumping in there because I quite like the company. Then it ended up like about 700% up, and it kept going up the next day as well. So you never know. These stocks, I try. You got to have a set of rules, though. I always find you got to stick to a set of rules. And if you see a company go nuts one day, you just jump in anyway. You often get more burn than you will do well. So a bit of patience, a bit of research. It's, every share price has its down days, and that's where you got to realize. And sometimes if it's rallied like crazy, it can have a couple of big down days. So, and that's, research.
You sound like me, Justin.
Yeah. Well, no, I know people who are so good investors who recommend stocks to me, and it's moved already very quickly.
Yeah.
And I think, and I've got in there, and it's just come back, and you're sitting on a loss for like, 3 months or whatever. I thought, well, if I had a bit of patience, do a bit more research, I could have got in a different level. And so it is all about not even the story, but a bit of timing as well. You can, and it's, that's the thing with, markets. It's very emotional, isn't it? You can jump in, you think it's going to the moon.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, why that saying is buy low, sell high, sticks around, this is very hard to do. I mean, the thing is, when everything's high, like the markets are very high, people think it's going to the moon. When everything's down, people think it's going to the floor. But no, the time to buy is when it's going down, pretty all the markets, everyone's bearish, and the time to sell is when everyone's bullish. But your emotions get caught up in that, and they can't do it. It's hard to do.
Well, in that context, I've got two others which I've come across this week. Which one was reported, another one I actually interviewed, which fits straight into that camp. Either their shares have been on the floor for such a long time, and they've got great recovery potential. I interviewed CEO Tim Sykes yesterday of Proactis. Now, I mentioned this company because it's a bit like Rosslyn we've talked about. Rosslyn, which does all the cost control, et cetera, for corporates. Now, this Proactis does cost control as well, but largely on the overhead, on the indirect. So when you look at a P&L of a company, like a manufacturer, if you call the cost before gross margin, which is the cost of goods sold, is the supply chain stuff. That's what Rosslyn do, and with all their big data. Anything below gross margin, indirects, is really where their software, Proactis' software, operate, okay? So they both take out sort of 10 to 15% of a big corporate's cost base by implementing their software, okay? So it's effectively, spend management sort of systems is where their core is. What the similarities are, they've both got 90% recurring revenues, ARR. They've both got very high gross margins, and they've both got top-notch customer bases. Now, Proactis, which their share price is roughly around about, I don't know, early 30s when I last saw it. They've got... I think they've reached a tipping point because they're on about... sort of like their sales are about 50 million. They've got ARR and SaaS revenues, as I say, of about, well, I think ARR's underlying, if you strip out some other stuff, is about 41 million. And then you've got sort of like, if you add on the extra bits and pieces, which is volume generator, you get SaaS of about sort of 45 million. And they've gone through the ringer over the last couple of years. But actually, they're seeing quite a good uptick in their top line. They had record levels of new business wins last year. And it was about sort of like, I think it was £14.7 million. Now, the point of that is, it hasn't yet dropped to the bottom line. As you say, that will come through. And you need to divide by four to see the revenue impact. And last year, that was neutralized by an over level of churn of about sort of equal. So the sales stayed about the same. But going forward, churn's coming down and new business is going up as they replicate their success in Holland and the UK, in places like Germany, France, and the US. And I spoke to Tim, and I'll tell you, he's pretty bullish. He believes in the fullness of time, they can do sort of like 25, 30, even 35 million of new business wins each year. You divide that by four, yeah, for the first year, and you get six, and then you get 10% top line growth. But of course, you're going to get the benefit of that again coming the next year because you have to divide the new lot wins by four, but then you get the other four, which is already there. So you can see how top line growth can absolutely moonshot on the recurring revenue streams. And if they do that, then this business will easily be valued at four times sales. You put four times sales on 50 million of turnover, you get 200 million. You take the net debt out of about 44, you get a share price of over 150p. I mean, that's just like the maths. And where are the shares now today? I don't know, about
34 pence. And yeah, and do you know what? The share price there, it looks quite good, actually, because it's in a range. It's not gone nuts. Of course, it's sold off again. You know, I keep looking at those dips in the dash for cash for March, and it went down to 13 pence, and now it's 34 pence. But since pretty much, May, it's been flatlining pretty much, so that's quite nice there. It's not gone down. It's gone a little bit, but, you know, it's a nice range. It already needs, I think, some positive metrics, some positive news.
I've been following this company for years, yeah, and I've always been sort of like, you know, waiting for the right opportunity. And they've also got this other product called Be Paid, which basically accelerates early payments for small sort of like purchases by corporates to suppliers. It accelerates the payment terms by suppliers. And it's actually the only game in town. Because if you think about these forward-funded models using software, most of them are for big assets like cars, houses, you know, all this sort of stuff. It's stuff that the corporates buy, which are quite sort of capital-intensive. Very few of them actually do these none of them which do indirect. So this could be an extra sort of like lift for the shares. But I wouldn't buy it for that. I would buy it for just the core business, because the actual valuation stands on its own two feet just on that. And if the BPay does actually get going and get momentum, you're going to see this definitely go well above 150, no doubt about it. So again, if you've got a 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 year view, you know, have a look at this, because you know, it's a very, very, you know, interesting. And then the other one, the good final one,
PhD, that is, well, they took a PhD practice.
That's a great ticker, isn't it? PhD. anyway, the last one, and I don't know if we've talked about it. It's unusual, but it's a recruitment business, which is the UK's number one STEM, and that's science, technology, engineering, and maths, sort of like, you know, staffing business. And it's been going through the ringer. The shares have come, they were hitting about sort of like, I don't know, sort of like even worst case, sort of 40, 50p. They've shot up after the results. And the reason is because the management team have done an unbelievable job. And in a downturn, they've generated masses of cash, and they've gone from a big net debt position a year ago of about, I think it was 20 million, 24 million or something net debt. They're now in a net cash position of about 14 million. And a lot of that has come through just from basically, you know, very good cost control and cash control, but also changing the terms of their contractor base, who they actually use, because that's lifted the cash position. It means that going forward, their working capital isn't going to be heavy at all. So their balance sheet is absolutely watertight. Now, the other interesting bit here is, one, they're on a rock bottom valuation because of the nobody likes recruitment businesses. But if you look at the shares to what happened after the great financial crisis in 2008, 2009, there's a big similarity here, because when it hit the bottom of that cycle, the shares were about 50p, which is what they were, I think, about 50, 60p yesterday or something. Now, and then a year later, they went to £2. They stayed at about £2 for about until 2012. And then they went from £2 to £6 in about 12 months. So when you go for, when you're talking about timing and thinking of when you're buying, when there's blood on the streets, well, I think there's more rivers of blood here than there is anywhere else in the market, because everybody hates the sector. But if you think
who do you say this was? I missed
this. This is Gattaca. This is Gattaca.
Oh, Gattaca. Okay. Cool.
Sorry, didn't know. I thought about it. Anyway, so it's Gattaca, yeah? And they basically, as I say, they do, say, engineer. They're the UK's number one recruitment agency or recruitment firm. And as I say, they've basically got a brilliant turnaround situation. And if the market goes in their advantage, then they could do, obviously, really well. I have a fair value for this stock of 140p, and that's pretty conservative.
Yeah, they're 58 now. Okay, and do you know what? I've been looking at recruitment, looking at the, I always look at the American job numbers, you know, to see where they're going and where they've been. And it's sort of encouraging. I know it hasn't, the second wave hasn't really locked down America like it's locked down Europe and the UK. But if you look at the continuing claims, at the peak in May, it was 24 million. And now we're down to 7.3, and only starting off at around 3.5. So we're getting really back to where we were previously. So it's very encouraging that a lot of people are going back to work in America, you know?
Yeah, and if you actually think about what's going to happen, you know, when we get the economy going, it's the Boris boom, 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 isn't it? Big infrastructure, which is HS2, Hinkley Point, you know, Crossrail 2. I mean, there's massive schemes. You've got, you know, huge roads and rail to investment to be done to get people back to work. Plus, with more people working at home and going into the cloud, you're going to have that huge sort of like, you know, retraining business, you know, retraining people from doing certain jobs into more tech jobs. And they're absolutely right in that it should be a beneficiary. So you could see that huge operating leverage for Gattaca, you know, going forward, because their cost base is as tight as a drum at the moment.
Yeah, but I don't know whether mentioning Boris is a good thing or bad thing these days. Because let's be honest, a friend of mine, I said recently something on a WhatsApp group with a friend of mine, and he said, yeah, but you said there wasn't going to be another lockdown. I said, listen, I wasn't the only one saying that. The Prime Minister of this country said that about three weeks ago. And there is a lockdown. But the thing is, what I said is, yeah, but if you look at this lockdown, it's less severe than the last lockdown. And there is less patience for lockdowns now because, of course, therapeutics are out there that are, less people are dying of COVID.
You know? Steroids, I understand.
Like, and all we have to do is we have to limit that, you know, the amount of hospital admissions. But that will happen as soon as you get these vaccines in. Like they said, apparently, before Christmas, and several sources have said this, NHS staff and over 85-year-olds, I think they're saying, will be, vaccinated pretty much. And that's the vulnerable groups are taken care of pretty much. And then we can sort of open up. So even if we have to do another lockdown, which I doubt it, it'll be again less severe than what we got now, you know? So they're getting less severe. So I don't think we'll have another lockdown now, though, because we are weeks, months away from, you know, inflection points in regards to vaccines and all that stuff, you know? So there we are.
I'm with you. I actually think Boris has dropped the ball on this. I wrote about it on social media this morning. And what I think we need now, urgently, is the government to educate people that we've just got to live with the virus for a short term, and we've got to basically, you know, sort of almost shock them, be graphic in that if we get this secondary transmission between people who have got it and the people who are vulnerable, whether they're elderly or whatever conditions, we're going to get lots of hospitalisation. We cannot have a lockdown. We can avoid a lockdown simply by better social distancing and people being disciplined. If they catch it, then they basically, you know, if they want to go and party, they don't transmit it. And if you get both ends of that, the vulnerable and the youngsters or the people who are the super spreaders from not super spreading, everybody's sort of like, you know, working to all our benefit, then you can avoid the lockdown until we get the vaccine. And then we're absolutely, you know, we shouldn't have a problem. I just think we need. Yeah. Do you remember when we were kids and stuff? We had those Benetton adverts. We need some type of really shocking advert that scares people, that stops this secondary transmission between the people who've got it and the super spreaders and the people who are actually vulnerable and, of course, you know, basically going to have real problems with it. And if we'd stop that secondary transmission, the people who get it is going to be fine. And, you know, we don't need to go back into second lockdown or third lockdown. Anyway, I just think the government's dropped the ball on it.
Yeah, yeah. Soon of it, I mean, they're doing Liverpool, they're testing the city there. And soon there will be tests, I think, soon, as fast as like a breathalyzer test. And I think it should be the same kind of case. If you're out mixing and you've got COVID, they can breathalyze test you and literally within minutes know if you've got COVID and you'll be fined. And that's where it should be. I was talking to a guy who's got an investment fund in the week in Vietnam, right? 97 million population in Vietnam, 35 deaths they've had, that's all.
Yeah.
And that's because they listen to the government and say, you social distance or you're in trouble. And that's it. Yeah. And the same China.
And that's what we need to do.
And they haven't had the lockdown, you know, don't even lock down. So there we are.
Yeah.
Marvellous. Well, listen, we've got to say, if you like the video, you've got to hit that subscribe button and the notification bell as well. If you want to be notified, they'll send you an email whenever we release a video. And also, you can listen to it on the podcast. But marvellous stuff. Cheers for that, Paul. And we'll speak to you next week.
Yeah, please, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. AQAI up 15% to 16.4%. at 4, remote monitoring down 15%, 2.25. At 3, Omega Diagnostics, that's up 4.8% to 776.5. At 2, Attis Oil and Gas, down 6.7% to 0.021 pence. And at 1, Empire Metals, that is up 11.5% to 4.85 pence. All right, top 5. Most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, it is Dev Clever Holdings, Heads of Terms. It's a big deal there. Heads of Terms with the National Independent Schools Alliance, India's largest governing body for budget private educational institutions. At 4, it is European Metals Holdings, increased access for US investment with OTC listing. At 3, it is Veredici. We talked about this, Holdings and Company. It's just a holdings company. What is it? It's Unicorn Asset Management. It's taking over 3% of that company. We talked about that with Paul Hill on the podcast. A lot of potential there. At 2, it is i3 Energy, commencement of trading on Toronto Stock Exchange. And at 1, it's Alban Minerals Horse Hill update. And let's just have a quick look at the most read RNS this year. Let's just skip over to a different page. Most read is Remote Monitoring Systems, Direct Dealing and Conversion of CLN TVR. Empire Metals is there as well. Dev Clever Holdings and what else is there? Omega Diagnostics. Exercise of options. Okay, check that out. Those lists there at voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.